Now for the main event, and what a delight to be able to introduce my grand sponsor, a surprise for us all. We're privileged to have Willie.
Hi, my name is Willie.
Hey, Willie.
Now y'all can just get up and leave now. I'll go back and pick up a couple of the old tapes, but sometimes I'm asked to do this when our speaker wasn't able to show up. But before I start, I just want to thank Thad. Don't go out the door, man. I just want you to know that we love you, man. And I've been there, and your boy was here about 6 weeks ago. He said right back then, it was 3 weeks, and you told him, you introduced him to us, and now shortly after that, he's gone. So you know we're here for you, brother. All right. Thank you. I want to thank all the birthday people. It's a real privilege and an honor to get one day here. You know, for me, it's just happy to get 1 hour because, when I got here, I weren't the guy that stand up in front of this microphone today. In fact, I was afraid to stand in front of a microphone. It's kind of hard to believe, but that's a fact. So let's have a meeting, all right? Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we try to carry this message to others and to practice these principles in all our affairs. That's what the 12th step says. It assumes or presumes that when we get here, we have done those first 11. And now our job, I'm not just doing something because I'm asked to do it, but this is my role. This is how I pay Al-Anon back. I have to carry the message back so that if some newcomer out there can hear what I've gone through and know that they can make it. That's what it's all about. You know, my buddy Jackie's not here tonight, but we often talk about that look we have in our eyes. You know, I look out there in that audience, and it's one common thing that's staring back at me. It's that me too. You guys know what I've gone through because you've been there too. And if you knew, you get the glory of working these steps and trying to walk through things one day at a time. And then at some point in time, some speaker won't show up, and then you'll be walking around minding your business. They'll say, "Hey, Willie, can you speak for us tonight?" Okay, so that's that. Okay, it's time to get down to business. I need to tell you what it was like, you know, and how I got here and what it's like today. I was born many, 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 many years ago. In a little town called Galveston, Texas. And before you yell too much, I want to say to you, I got a good disclaimer right now. This is where I picked up this great tan. So if you want a tan like I got, it's called my Texas tan, so you know what it is. So, you know, I grew up in what I thought was a normal family. You know, I had my mom and a dad. And, yeah, duh, I should have had. I know I had to have a dad to be here. But I had my mom there and a dad. And then I was a sandwich between two girls. My parents had one daughter that's 2.5 years older than me, than me, than my younger sister. And was no alcohol that I knew of in my home. But I had this favorite uncle who used to come visit us from Kansas City, Missouri. And he and my parents would get together on Friday. They get up and they get all dressed up and go out. My mom, my dad, and his wife would come home on Friday night. He come home on Tuesday. So we know who he was, you know. So that was the thing. It wasn't long before I got the bright ideas, and after I finished high school, I ran off with my high school sweetheart. I went to Denver, Colorado, and started my journey that was going to get me here to you. We stayed in Denver. I stayed in Denver 3 months because I went to Denver. I was a great planner. I I left Texas like it was. I graduated in May, and then I took off to Denver with Bermuda shorts. It's a reason they named Bermuda shorts and not Denver shorts, you know. So about September, you know, my mama kept calling me. They found where I was then. They kept calling me and say, son, why don't you go to California? I got relatives out there. And I did with most, you know, teenagers. And I was still a teenager then, do with parents. Say, oh, moms, you don't know what you're talking about. See, our parents don't know nothing until we get to our age and we find out how smart they were and how dumb we are. But anyhow, I went to Denver, and then like September around Labor Day, God in his infinite wisdom took that temperature and just turned that switch down. I got on the phone and said, hey, moms, where's some of them relatives you got in California? And I was out of Denver just like that. So anyhow, we hung out, you know, and I had, you know, we had first child, then we had the second child, then we had the third son. And the third son, let me tell you a little bit preface about it. We had the two boys. We went back to Texas, and I came back to California. And I was pretty hot-headed, you know, and I had quit my job for no reason whatsoever and thought I could find another one. That's what 20-year-olds do. They don't think. They just react. So anyhow, I quit my job, and I couldn't find another one. And shortly after that, we had these two boys. One was one, another one was two. And my younger sister came to visit us during the summer. So we, having such a hard time, I sent them back to Texas with my younger sister. And then that's when I found out that then she was pregnant with our third child. Then I came up with a great idea that if I come to you with a great idea, you run the other way. So I said to them, I said, well, why don't we put him up for adoption? And that's what we did. Now, let me tell you what happened with that. California has very strict laws about adoption. So when he was born, right there at one of the hospitals, I think it was called California Hospital, we were in the maternity room. She had the baby. Then they brought him to her. Then they brought him to me. And I thought then that I got to hold him and stuff. Then the nurse came and took him. And when she took him, she not only took him out the room, but a big part of my gut left with him. And I spent the next, till I got here, trying to fill that hole. So what happened then was that I do what most people with big holes in their guts and nothing up here. I kept looking for Mrs. Wright because my girlfriend had enough of me. So I went to look for Mrs. Wright, and shortly I met the first person I married. And, oh, that sound cold. I hope she don't hear this tape. Okay, I finally ran into my first wife. Okay, oh, that's better. That's better. So anyhow, she had three girls, and we had the two boys, and we call ourselves the Brady Bunch. We thought we could make it. But see, she came to that marriage with her heart. I came with this empty hole. And you can't you can get love out of a heart, but nothing out of empty hole. And that's what I brought. And I kept looking for Mrs. Wright for the next years of my life. Nothing was good enough. You know, nothing was good enough for me. Nobody was good enough. No place was good enough. I bounced around like anything. The most consistent thing I've done is be here in these rooms for 26 and a half years. So anyhow, that marriage lasted for a while. And then I had another relationship and then another marriage. But I'm going to talk about that marriage. Now, I was 39 years old, and I've been self-employed for many years, and this young lady walked into my office. It's my place of business, and she lit up a cigarette, and I said to her, young lady, you know, you can't smoke. You're too young to smoke. And she put her hands on her hips like any, you know, pre-alcoholic does. Put her hands on her hip and said to me, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm 22 years old. And if you don't believe me, I'll come back on Saturday and I'll show you. When she came back on Saturday, she showed me. She was 22. So anyhow, we began our journey. And the what happened was she let me, she's the one who informed me or let me know I found out that I didn't hear too well. So she came into my place of business one day and she said, me and my little girl, I lost my job. And now I'm going to have to go back on welfare. Now, what I heard was that, hey, Willie, I lost my job. I got this two-year-old, and I need you to take care of us. That ain't what she said, but that's what I heard, you know. So we went on to a couple other things. I want to talk a couple more incidents about that, then I want to get to recovery. A couple incidents. One of the issues was that I don't know about you, but she always had someone that caused her to drink. And I don't know about you, the person that has alcoholism in your life, but this girl always had somebody I could blame that caused her to drink. So it was my neighbor upstairs, and he moved and somebody else moved in, and he was to blame then, too. So anyhow, like alcoholic marriages, you know, there's, infidelity. And so one time I went upstairs, and I showed up when I wasn't supposed to show up. And then she said to me, you know, we were just having a meaningful conversation. Whoa. So anyhow, I said, okay. And I went back downstairs, and another time I showed up, and this time the conversation was way too meaningful for even my eyes. So she came back downstairs, and then I had to get out of there. And I don't know about you, but my house, I have to always share it with you guys like this. My house had these, I don't know if your house had alcoholic blinds and curtains like mine did. But mine had these blinds that went like that, and it had a little peak in the middle would fit my forehead, you know, and then it went on across. And then the other ones, like, the face was like this. Boom, the face just like my face. So maybe your house went like that. But, you know, the ladies in the program often talk about their chenille robes and stuff. They picked everything off of us guys had, and me, I should say, for me, I had my Al-Anon sweats, you know, because you have to be ready. The Al-Anons are pretty deceiving. So when she come in, I didn't want to know if I was getting up or going to bed because, you know, sweats, you can't tell what they've done. So and I don't know how your ears are, but I could tell how many drinks she had from the cadence of her walk. Anybody, can I get a witness to that? Anybody have that? Yeah. So when she would walk in, you know, she'd come down the walkway, and I hear this, you know, I don't know, this, our AA car. You know, I don't know if you guys had an alcoholic car, but this one had the light that shined that way, and it's supposed to be going this way. So I don't know about you guys, and it sounded like a time bomb when it was going tick, 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 tick. It was old Dodge Dart. So anyhow, but I could tell when she got out that car if she had been drinking or not. So when she would come in, I would do with the same thing most of us Al-Anon learn to do is we put these fingers out like that and the other three is pointing back at us. And we just stick that finger. We have that special Al-Anon look when they walk in, and you know. And so anyhow, she came, I went back downstairs and then she came in. And she said to me, she said, guess what, Willie? I said, what? I said, I saw what you was doing up there. She said, no, let me tell you what really happened. So that's how I began. I didn't see too well either then. So anyhow, by the time she got through telling me what really happened, she said that, Willie, I was coming from the Boys Market to get a couple of beers. Now, why alcoholics can only buy two beers at a time, I don't know. But anyhow, I was coming from the Boys Market. That lady has one of them, too. So I was coming from the Boys Market. I mean, she said she was coming from the Boys Market, and they had these covered boxcars that's what I call them. You guys, probably real proper, you call them freight cars or something. But anyhow, they are railroad cars that haul freight. So that's a proper name. Anyhow, we had these tracks, and black folk always live around tracks. So we had these tracks. We had these tracks, you know, that was running right alongside us. And, all right, Mike. So anyhow, we had this covered car and the tracks. And so she came in and said, I was coming from the Boys Market and I was assaulted. Well, I forgot what I saw. I put on my Superman cape and then I called up every railroad in Southern California, and most of them hung up, except for one. And you guys know where she needs to be. She needs to be sitting in one of these seats. But anyhow, she told me, well, Mr. Williams, I'll look and see when the last time we had a freight car on that line. And I said, okay. So she called me the next day and said, Mr. Williams, we haven't had a car on that line in the last 5 years. Whoa, I got my evidence now. So when she come, when she walked in, I said to her, I said, guess what I heard? She said, they said they haven't had a freight car on that line in the last 5 years. And she looked at me like, oh my God, what did this dude do? And she said, well, let me tell you again what really, really happened. Oh, that time the rage came out of me. We had a lot of crystal around the house. And man, I was the black tornado. I was throwing crystal here and crystal there and crystal here and crystal there. And, you know, but guess who had to clean it up? Yeah. After I got through cleaning up the crystal, then we went to Vegas and got married. That's the solution. That was a solution. I need to tell you one more incident. Ron always liked this one. You know, I figure after a while that if she knew how she acted when she drank, she wouldn't drink. So I thought I would tape one of those episodes. So that was before videotape, guys. Boy, if I had my cell phone then, boy, I would have been in good shape. But they even got streaming video now, right? So I would really have the evidence. But I had to settle for what I had then. That was an audio cassette. So I said to her, I said, you know, I know if you knew how you acted when you drank, you probably wouldn't drink. And she still looked at me with that blank look, duh. So anyhow, I said, well, what if I bought your favorite drink and bought your favorite drink and some cigarettes, how would that work? Oh, she said, that would be great. I'd go along with this one anyway. So anyhow, I showed up with the drink and, you know, I walked in. And we had the little girl, she was two then, and we put on some soft music, and I put the bottle down, and I took my little wimp drink, and she took the bottle. And at the end of the night, it ended up like every other night had happened. By the end of the day, instead of her sitting next to me, and I'm going to have this romantic night I think I'm going to have, Bugs Bunny was much more important than me, because she liked cartoons, and she would move off the couch, down on the floor, and she was kind of a drinker that threw up a lot, and she threw up. I cleaned up, but the next morning we had this tape. Now she wakes up, and I say, okay, you want to know what happened last night? Well, so I said, let me show you here. So I put the tape on, and she said, I did that. Yeah, I did that. Yeah, wait to hear some of them other things you did, you know. And so we played the tape, and she did what most alcoholics do that I know of do at the time. She swore that she would never, ever, never, ever do that again. That lasted about 5 hours. One of her friends came by and picked her up, and they went out, and she came home drunker than she's ever been before. But that's the day she gave me the gift. Because there was one last person in my office complex that would talk to me. I didn't know now then, but I know now that she was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. So she said to me, she said, Willie, let me tell you, I have a place for you to go. I said, where? She says, a meeting down on Wilshire and St. Andrew's Place. Now, I didn't know anything about this program, and I, you know, it was in April or March of the year, so I put on my best suit, and I went to this meeting. And I show up there, and I wonder why I was in the church and not at a business function, like at a concert hall or something like that, that I thought it should be. So I walked up, and then I see all this cigarette smoke and all these guys high-fiving each other, and you guys know who they were. And then I went upstairs, and they had these kids with spiked hair and blue hair and all kind of stuff on. And you guys also know who they were. Those are the Alateens. Then I walked into this meeting hall, and this was 26 and a half years ago. Wasn't a lot of guys here there. I walked in that meeting, and here's this guy with this big empty hole in his gut, and I was in heaven. Oh, buddy, was I. I walked in the meeting, had all these ladies, and I sit in the back of the room trying not to look like a newcomer. You know, nothing looked like a newcomer, but it looked more like a newcomer than a newcomer. So after the meeting, and if you guys are following that, you really should be in this room. So after this, after the meeting, we had those little cards that we signed to put your name on. So I sat between these two ladies, and at the end of the meeting, I was getting ready to leave. They said, wait a minute, we want to give you our number. Oh, my God, I have fucked heaven. Oh, man, you don't say that to a guy with a hole as big as mine in his gut. And I said, oh, I was in heaven. You know, a lot of some people say they come in and it takes them weeks and months to make that telephone call. No, not the kid. They get the very next day at 6 o'clock in the morning, I was on the horn. And I called the first lady. She said, hey, well, I got to go to work. You need to call my friend. So I called the friend up and I started my little 13-step rap and she 12-stepped me. Now, let me tell you guys something. Right. Now, I didn't know then that they say men should have men sponsors and women should have women sponsors. But if that was the case in the law, that's why we don't have laws here. If we had to follow that, you would have a different speaker here today. And I was thinking, I was up in Canada talking a couple of weeks ago, and I heard one of the earlier speakers talk about the men in our life. And I was trying to determine what happened with me and Annie. Well, I learned what happened was that she treated me like a kid brother, not like the outcast that as Candy would say, my native family did, and we call them those goddamn loved ones, like my native family did, you know, because you guys are my real family. And she began to treat me like you guys treat me. And she used to tell me things like, Willie, you're good at what you do. You know, Al-Anons bury themselves in their work because they have no other worth. So we find something that we can find some worth. It's either work, grace. Read the what's the dilemma of alcoholic marriage. It'll point you out, you know. So anyhow, this clock is okay, because I can't tell time. You know I can count, but I can't tell time that well. So anyhow, I see that clock. I know what that one says. Okay. So anyhow, she told me that I was worthy. And then she started to walk me through the steps. I did my fourth step, you know, and I wrote down all of these horrible things that I brought to all of my relationships. And she just looked at me and said, hey, me too. Oh, I did that. Oh, me too. So that was the first time I didn't have all the shame I'd had. Then she did a little bit of things like said, hey, Willie, that was a Tuesday night. She said, on Wednesday night, there's a meeting down the hall. You need to go there. Not down the hall, down the street on Wilshire. And I showed up there and Dr. Paul and Maxine talked that night. And I got to meet them. So she said, there's a meeting over at Cedars. It's called Steps 1, 2, and 3. I went to that meeting. On Friday nights, there's a candlelight meeting on Fountain in Fairfax. Show up there. Now, what have I done? This person I didn't know on Monday has got me to go to 4 meetings by Friday. And they must, I always say those sponsors go to sponsor school or something. So anyhow, so that was Friday night, Saturday. That was a living in sobriety meeting in the daytime. So I thought, I can go to meeting in the daytime, I'm off. And she said, oh, but no, there's another meeting, the Chapter 9 meeting up to here, you need to show up. And that's the one Gloria was talking about earlier. You need to show up. So I showed up to Chapter 9 meeting. So now I'm really getting, Sunday morning, I think, like, oh, it's the Sabbath day, I can take that off. So, oh, no, there's a great meeting at the Riverside Hospital. And all these meetings I'm going to, I'm buying all this literature. I wasn't reading it, but I was buying it. And so by Monday night, I had everything that you guys got. So by the time I got to the Monday night meeting, I walked in and this little lady greeted me at the door, and she stuck her hand out. I stuck my hand out, and she said, no, we hug here. And so that lady be very special. You'll hear about it in a minute. And I said, okay. And so then I went, I remember at that Saturday meeting, that was a lady there that looked a lot like this lady who stuck her hand out. So anyhow, I kept going to meetings, and Sunday night meeting, they had a couple there that was sponsoring the Friday night Alateen group, and they said that they needed an Alateen sponsor in the meeting. So I went home, and I called Annie up, and I said, guess what, Annie? I said, what? They asked me to be an Alateen sponsor. Ain't that the craziest thing you ever heard? And she said, without a whip, Willie, that'll be great. Duh. See, that was the first thing I learned. You don't want to do something, don't ask your sponsor. So anyhow, she started me to sponsor an Alateen. And as, you know, that's when the consistency came into my life. Because every Tuesday night at 7:30, you'd find Willie at the Little White Chapel. We started at St. Joe's first on Friday night, and then the Little White Chapel meeting is still going on today. But that's where the consistency became. Because the kids, all they wanted you to do is just be there. And they just wanted to see a consistent face every week. Because in alcohol homes, there's no consistency. Even in alcoholism homes, not home, you don't have the home where the alcohol is still there. When the alcohol leaves, his alcoholism remains. So in any event, the kids begin to give me unconditional love. And then this hole in my gut began to get smaller and smaller and smaller. And then I didn't have to hump over too much more. I could stand straight. Andy was in that group. So we fast forward a little bit. At that time, I was still in a relationship with the alcoholic, and I had been going to meetings, and they had asked, and I would ask at the meetings, when am I going to know? And then the long times, we'll all sit and tell you this thing you hate. You're going to know when you know when you know. So I found out, you know, after one of those meetings, I did know, and I got to say to her, went home and said to her, well, that's it. You know, I found that we started this relationship for the wrong reason. Sometimes relationships built on quicksand don't last. And I swore after I left that relationship, I would never, ever, never, ever, ever, ever be in another relationship again. That lasted 3 weeks. I had this lady call me and said, you know, and she had been talking to me, and she was, you know, you wouldn't know her name at that time, and she's going to kick me when I get home. But you wouldn't know her name at the time, because every the first word would come out of her mouth, guess what Paul did today? I say, do you tell me one more time of what Paul did, I'm going to hang up on you. So anyhow, when we used to be friends, like she said, well, one, I need some help with helping me with my divorce and thing, and I did that. And then one day she called me. She said, "Hey, my son wants to need a ride to SCAC." And so SCAC is Southern California. He has tears in his eyes, and he never does that. And so we get to SCAC, and he has, you know, he'll tell you, because and he has a disorder that he can't control. And so I called his mom, you know, just repeatedly and let her know what was going on. So anyhow, that's when we began to talk. And so we begin to date, and you need to hear her story to tell you about that dating episode. But anyhow, we begin to date, and one day she came into my office and said, "Willie, guess what?" I said, "Oh, no. Uh-uh." I said, "Jackie is 24 years old, and I just sent SC their last tuition payment." And I said, "I can't be having no babies." And her smart way she talks, and you guys know her, she said, "You're not having them, I am." I said, "Okay." So anyhow, we had this great program wedding over at it's on Hollywood and Gardner, as an Episcopal church there, where Gene and Jack Kissel used to do Frank Thanksgiving dinners there all the time. And we had a pack, I mean, a full house of people. And then we started our journey. Let me share something. The lady that I told you guys that taught me to her, she's my mother-in-law, and she's 92 years old. We went there on Mother's Day, and she said to me, and she sat down, she looked at me, and she said, "Willie, most people have bad things to say about their son-in-law, but you have never, ever let me down. You've always treated my daughter fair and my grandkids with the best." What a blessing. Where else can you get that? Now, I need to move forward a little bit and talk a little bit about the, it's three boys, Andy, Matt, and Tim. And Matt and I used to fight all the time when he was young because he was the man of the house, and he can't have two men in the house, but he was the man in the house, and we fought. And Tim, you know, his dad never did like him, and so I can't say that, but he and his dad didn't get along. So I had those three. And one of the things about them going to Alateen, one of the things that was important, when we would have problems, we would sit and we'd say, "Let's have a group conscience." At that time, John was real little. And and we sit around and everybody get a chance to say what we want to say. And then he raised his hand, "Can I talk now too?" You know, he was like 2 years old. Didn't know that we really was going to need the group conscience when he got about 15. So anyhow... he was, you know, at the San Fernando Valley Convention, he was the youngest Alateen tot there. He was 9 days old. And he grew up in these rooms. But I want to tell you today that growing up in these rooms and Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon doesn't prevent alcoholism. It arrests it. So don't think because you have kids or they grow up in the rooms that they will not drink. We powerless over that. So he went on his wild ride when he was about 17 on my 22nd Al-Anon birthday. He called me and said, "Dad, I'm leaving." And somebody was like, took a good, and he left. For two and a half or 3 months, you know, my heart went with him. He's tall and thin, but he was like that. He did everything he needed to do out there. I remember sitting in a restaurant. I had three books. I had the Brown Book, the Blue Book, and the Al-Anon book. And some guy said was going to a Friday night AA meeting and said, "Man, look like you really need a program." And I said, "You got every book there is." So I said, "Yeah." So anyhow, they said, "Well, you know, we've got, thank God he got it out of his system young. Maybe his bottom will come a lot sooner." So anyhow, and you guys, the men in this room, helped me walk through that. Talk a little bit about my son that we put up for adoption. Okay, with 47 years and 4 days, I got a call from his mom in Texas. Say, hey, I got a call from Michael. I say, who's Michael? He say, that was our son. We put up for adoption. And I say, yeah? And she said, yes. I said, where is he? She said, well, he just talked to me, and he's going to call you in the next hour or so. I was trying to get to my Thursday night meeting here because I knew I had some guys here that a guy here who had been adopted and I wanted to talk to. But before I could get here, the phone rang. And he said, hey, this is Joy. I said, okay, Mike wants to talk to you. And so he was, I said, where is he? He was playing softball. So he came around the third base and he said, hey, I just got two questions to ask you. I said, what? He said, I want to know, first of all, who in this family had red hair and freckles? And that's the uncle I told you came home on Tuesday. But that's the one who had red hair and freckles. And the second question he said was, why did you guys give me away? And I said, I don't have the answer to that question, son, but I'm going away to a weekend with a bunch of guys that I meet with every Thursday night. And for some reason, I weren't going to go because I had just blew up my leg. And Jose and Jack called me up and said, hey, Willie, we will drive if you want to go. And they picked me up, and the three of us cried on the way up there. I got to the retreat and up to our weekend, and then the guys, you know, just went on and on. And by Sunday morning, I mean, it wasn't a dry eye in the house. But they had filled this hole. So I could come home and say to him, son, your mom and I, when we put you out, we thought we was making the best decision two young people could make. We were having a hard time here, and we felt that your life would be much better. You could be raised much better by someone else. And that is the case. Mr. and Mrs. Jones were in their late 30s when they raised him, and they raised him and gave him a good life. He had a kidney disorder. So, and I said to him at that time, I said, son, I'm not going to try to make up for with the past, but we're going to start today. I'm going to be the best dad that you can have, that I'm going to be the best dad I can be now. What happened before, I have no, I can't do anything about that. So it's okay, let's start this journey. Well, as some of you know, many Saturdays, he'd show up at my office and we'd just chat and talk. So one Saturday he showed up and said, Dad, I need to talk to my young brother. My young bro. I said, who's it? John, I got to talk to him. I said, okay. So he finally got with John on Thursday night and they went out and they had such a great time. And we had been healing all of those wounds. On Monday night, John came in. He was just stoked. He was just all smiles. Monday night, I get a call at 4 o'clock in the morning, which is Tuesday morning, and say, hey, Michael's kidneys have shut down. So I go to the hospital, and his kidney had shut down, and he lived another 2 days. And but at that lunchtime, I went to visit him at lunchtime. And I held him, and I healed, and I let him go. And I came on here and took my 26-year cake, and all of you guys were here to help walk me through it. So when I say to you that Ray O'Keefe used to talk a lot, a guy in New York, and he used to say all the time in his chairs that, you know, this program, I've seen the lame walk. I've also watched the deaf hear, and I've seen the blind see. And I have seen the blind see. If that's not the good news, that is the good news. And I just want to say to you, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, well, I need to practice these principles and carry this message to others and practice these principles in all my affairs. Thank you.